The Silversmith's Daughter by Annie Murray. Read by Claire Corbett. The art and craft of the silversmith calls for appreciation and understanding of something more than the technical and materialistic elements. A true craftsman, one whose work is his own conception, and for the execution of which he is directly responsible, puts all his being, body, mind and spirit into his work. The value of all the things men and women make must be measured by the degree they succeed or fail in satisfying their whole being. Bernard Kouzner, Silversmith, 1935. 24 Chain Street, Hockley, Birmingham, 1898.
Take the child out of the house. For pity's sake, get her away from here.
Pa was on the landing, not with a candle, but in strained dawn light, his eyes red. He must have been weeping. But in her mind, those eyes were shocking as glowing coals, and that was how she remembered it afterwards. Pa with hot coals in his eyes, as he stood outside his own bedroom door. Mrs. Flett was there, and he said in a rasping voice,
"Get her dressed, will you? Take her away till it's over."
Daisy had woken suddenly, knowing that something wrong and terrible was happening. She could hear footsteps hurrying up and down the stairs and along the passage, and the muffled, urgent sound of voices. And there was another faint noise, not like anything human or that she recognised. Yet even then she knew instinctively it was her mother. She climbed out of bed and crossed the floorboards barefoot in the freezing dawn, taking her comforting scrap of cream wool shawl, an old one of Mom's, which had been torn into strips a few inches wide. She hugged it to her with one hand, reaching the other up to turn the door handle. Dear Mrs. Flett, who helped in the house, had mouse-brown hair in those days. She dressed Daisy and hauled her out and along the iron-cold streets until they saw the light of a little coffee house just opening its doors in the winter gloom. There was a dog inside, with a white hairy face, but that was all Daisy ever recalled of it. The next thing, she was standing outside Mum and Pa's bedroom door again, later in the morning, because it was properly light. Pa was there, and Mrs. Flett, and this time it was his hand turning the handle. They went into this room, which until now had been a place of morning love, where she went to snuggle between them for a few minutes while they drank a cup of tea before the day of work began. They would laugh and tell rhymes. Before the three of them got up, Mum, her coppery hair falling loose and thick and smelling of soap and lavender, would kiss her on one cheek and Pa on the other. His whiskers tickled and made her giggle, and often his beard gave off the metallic smells of the workshop, because that was Pa's smell. But this morning, Mum was in bed by herself. All items connected with the bloody struggle to produce that second little baby had been cleared away by then. Mum was just Mum to Daisy, but her outside name was Florence Tallis, and this morning she did not look much like Mum. She looked public and formal, like Florence Tallis. She lay with her auburn hair brushed straight, her eyes closed. Everything except her hair was white. The sheet, her nightgown, her face. It was so cold. The room, the silence. Daisy could hear her father's broken breathing as he tried to stifle his weeping behind her.
"Mum,"
she said, her voice very small. She didn't understand. With a finger, she tapped her mother's leg, wanting her to wake up and smile, sit up and draw her onto her lap as she would have done before, to smooth her finger over the little silver bracelet on Daisy's arm which she had made for her, with her name engraved in tiny letters, Daisy Louise Tallis. But the leg was cold and lifeless.
"Your mother's resting now,"
Mrs. Flett said kindly, but firmly, drawing her away. Daisy was 4 years old then. The gravestone in the new cemetery in Warstone Lane read, "Florence Mary Tallis, birth 1870, death 1898, beloved wife of Philip Tallis."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?